I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
J Cross, do you know where the hippest, coolest place for Guitar Nerds content on the internet is?
Is it Instagram?
No. That is quite good.
Oh, okay. Is it Twitter?
Yeah, quite good. Not good. Not as good. The place to go,
okay,
if you want to get some exclusive Guitar Nerds content, patreon.com/guitar nerds. We've had quite a few people sign up in the last week or so for the exclusive half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week.
The what sort of
it's content? Half an hour of exclusive Guitar Nerds content every week.
Exclusive?
Indeed. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. There's even...
Patreon!
There's even a mini-series by Joe Branton.
That's me.
That is you. Branton's Ranton, where he talks about... What sort of things do you rant about?
Oh, everything. The economy, the budget...
That's not true, is it?
No, loads of things. Most of them are very interesting.
Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
That's my name.
And Joe Branton.
Yeah! Podcast!
You've come in here full of vim and vigour this
podcast
week. And also
furia.
A new look. I feel like, you know how like Madonna sort of changes up her image every now and then?
A lot of my images are based on Madonna.
Yes, you're in a... I don't really know. Well, we've talked about what you look like, but we can't really share that on the pod. But you've gone for a Stark look.
Yes.
Quite stern.
Ned Stark.
I haven't done nothing.
Sort
has changed.
Authoritarian.
I had a little bit of a haircut.
Yes, it's a little bit, you know, you look a little bit authoritarian these days.
I am
speechless.
Yeah, for once. Thank God. So, thanks for joining us this week. That's what I normally say at the end. I don't know why I've said it now, but thanks for joining us this week, anyway.
Is that it?
No.
See you later, guys.
Just a little short podcast. Matt Knight, what have you been up to this week? You got a new pedal?
Yes, one for review from the good folks at Fuzzrocious, who we've talked about a lot. The company that they're all family company, and if you want to, you can pay extra and have their kids paint the boxes.
Yes.
Awesome company. I was lucky enough to meet Ryan and have a chat to him.
Wait. Is it extra? I thought it was less.
No, I think it's...
No, it's cheaper and the kids just randomly paint on it. Or it's more expensive and they'll do like some proper artwork.
No, I think artwork is standard.
Well, we will agree to disagree.
Artwork anyway.
You're so lively today.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
No, I was just trying to keep it fun.
Normally Mondays are... It's normally good. So we record this on a Monday.
It's because you've not drunk any booze.
No,
or have you drunk booze?
No, I haven't drunk booze.
That's why.
And no booze, no drugs, and I went for a run.
Oh, God.
You went for a run like a week ago.
No, it was on Sunday.
Have you been to work today?
Yes.
Because normally that's like that sort of Mondays are a hard day for you and you get dragged all the way down to like a level where we can tolerate hanging out with you.
Yeah.
Did you do a full day at work today?
No, I didn't actually.
There we go.
100%. There we go. So Matt, so which Fuzzrocious pedal did you get?
So I got the Feed Me, which is their new EQ. And it's really interesting. It's basically two high-pass filters and two low-pass filters, and each one has got 12 different options, giving you a total of 20,076 different combinations.
so dumb.
That is the best thing.
With a volume and tone. But it's... I mean, they even state that obviously there's going to be... there's a ridiculous amount of combinations in there, but if you find a really good one, you can email it to them. They'll put it on their library of different kind of cool sounds that they've found. But then you can...
Go on.
Sorry, Jay, what are you going to say?
No, go on. I was just going to say, let's make like a load of bad ones and email them in.
It just sounds like... What was that game? The game that just came out where this super massive... The one that you bought.
Oh, No Man's Sky.
It sounds like No Man's Sky. Like, if you find something cool, let us know.
Yeah, just email that over.
So weird.
But it's I've sort of been messing around with it a lot and following a couple of the settings that are on there, and you can kind of EQ a bit like a Seymour Duncan pickup booster. In fact, you can EQ single coils to be like a humbucker. You can do it vice versa. Works really well on bass, so you can kind of beef up a jazz bass, or you can kind of add loads of extra thud to a P bass. And because I'm using it in the ES8, I can run it before or after drive pedals.
Yeah.
So you can... scoop more mids out for a distortion, or you can push more back in for the amp. And if you crank your amp up and you want more drive, it works really well as just a straight ahead boost. So it's like super versatile. And they're like $150.
Wow. So a little bit more than like a GE7 or something.
Yeah. I think maybe necessarily the setup's maybe not as easy, because obviously they're not kind of labeled in the sense that obviously with the graphic EQ you've kind of just got a few sliders, but it's quite easy to just kind of dial in a high pass or a low pass and just tweak it until you find something that really works. And I found a couple of settings where I'm like, oh, that sounds great. You play with it for a bit and turn it off and you're like, oh, like my sound's gone. It's one of those really nice EQs where you dial in a great sound, when you turn it off you realize how much of a difference it was actually making. So
it's potentially the best make gooderer and also the worst make, or the best make worserer. You could really, really mess things up.
Yeah, I mean, I have dialed in a couple of sounds. I'm a bit like, wow, that sounds like totally thin and microphone-like. But then I suppose it's almost a bit like that Ibanez LF7 lo-fi that makes it sound like it's going through a megaphone or whatever. So I think for recording, potentially there's some wicked sounds in there. And it comes with a few little cards you can mark your own settings on.
Oh, can you then post them off to Fuzzrocious and say, put this up on your wall, this is a good setting?
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite good actually, because they actually dial it into, someone's actually made a bit of software that then shows the EQ curves of the tone control at 12 o'clock all the way minimum and all the way maximum, so you can actually see what it does to your EQ as well.
Matt, that was an excellent description. Completely not the pedal that I was talking about when I said you got a new pedal this week.
You wanted him to talk about the one that's pink.
Yeah, of course.
But that was still super cool.
Yeah, of course, that sounds amazing. I haven't heard it yet, but like the description sounds very good. But yeah, of course, I meant the one that's pink.
Yes. My new best friend, Jacob, at Mammoth Electronics, sent me a Pink Sparkle DD3.
Unbelievable.
We've been talking about some sort of like custom finish stuff, and he was like, oh, just by the way, I've sort of made you a Pink Sparkle DD3. And I was like, oh man, that's awesome, how much do you want for it? And he's like, oh man, I'll send it to you, it's fine. So
little bit of sneaky promotion going on now, I see. Little bung,
but it was it was super cool to get it, and it's awesome. Pink Sparkle, amazing finish. He's the same guy that did all the, he basically does all the kind of custom enclosures for most of the boutique pedal companies in America,
right?
Because that's the biggest expense for a lot of people, is screen printing and painting all these boxes. So he does all of that for loads of people. He even did the pink boxes for the Pelican Noise Works Pelator. Yeah.
What I want to know is how did he do all the detailing stuff, like the logo and the like the pedal name and stuff like that? I guess he must just have that stuff on file. And then he just recreates that as a transfer.
I've seen the guys at work doing some pretty nifty stuff with Illustrator, copying fonts and stuff like that. So I think you can probably just do it that way. And then I think the unit itself is obviously dismantled and then completely powder coated, because it's all done inside and out. It's not like a spray can.
Right.
It's like properly done, dismantled. And then he put a nice white LED in it as well.
Oh, I bet that looks awesome.
Yeah, and then it was good because I now got to A-B it with my old made in Japan DD3 as well.
What sounded quite better?
Cool. I actually preferred the more modern one. Mm. They were actually, if I could,
weird
I had space.
That. You mean the one that people can buy in shops right now, Matt?
The one that. So what you're saying is, you, a person who's really into buying old Japanese Boss pedals that generally go for a lot of money because they're really sought after, people should stop trying to buy those.
Probably buy the ones they can get from their local dealer.
Yeah, and also...
Well, with a two-year included warranty.
As an aside, the price of the old desirable ones then goes down because fewer people are buying them and you're able to buy them at a more reasonable price.
Yeah, two side effects.
Matt,
of this
you are talking from
Matt.
A position of this is insider trading. I have to say, we should suspend your eBay account.
You can just like buy the big short.
Yeah, this is the big short.
You can actually buy a Japanese DD3 for probably less than you can buy a new DD3 for. So
they do.
But no, it was really interesting because there was slightly more of a high frequency roll off on the vintage one than there was compared to the modern one, and I suppose that's just because the quality of the chip or the processing power in the chips has obviously massively improved in the last 30 years since it's been a pedal. But it was quite, if I had another space I would have put all three on there because I've also got a DM2 and I was like, DM2's already got enough of, well, it's an analog pedal so it's already got all the high-end roll-off, so I wanted something a bit brighter.
Surely you're not going to put the pink one on the board, though, are you? Isn't it just like a commemorative thing? Aren't you going to put it in a little glass case somewhere?
But it'll match his guitar.
No.
I'm going for the all pink pedal board.
Matt, you should get a pink powder coated ES8.
You should do that.
Oh, that would be good. That would be amazing.
Matt,
I could
box everything up.
Buttons on it.
Matt, what you should actually do is you should box up your RE2 one, send it over to Mammoth and get them to re-enclosure it for you.
Yes, pink Rolex.
Can you get pink barefoot buttons?
Yes, you can.
Ooh. Yeah.
Indeed.
And you can get them labelled as well, which is quite cool for something like an ES8 because you could have them labelled with each individual pedal in each loop.
You
which
could.
Which would be quite cool.
You could. Very, very cool indeed.
But I have thought about getting the Space Echo Retolex, but I don't know.
You just don't want to trash the value of it. That's the thing.
Yeah, but I'm not going to make the same mistake again.
Yeah, don't ever sell
especially
it again.
Especially when they're worth about £1,200.
Yeah,
they're going for about £1,200 now. It's just like, worth considering.
I'm so gutted I never got.
You've got the most expensive one now.
No, it's not the most expensive one.
Compared to what it cost you.
Well, yeah, for sure. But, it might end up as the most desirable because I think it's the rarest.
Yeah, it's because it's not the best one. That's why. It's all
right. Well,
yeah. It's all right.
Well...
J. Cross, have you managed to plug a guitar in this week? I know you're in the middle of moving and doing stuff.
I haven't plugged anything in, actually. I have been I've been playing a bit of guitar acoustically.
Okay.
Not acoustic guitar, obviously. And I am... We talked about the fact that I recorded the other week, didn't we?
You plugged in loads of pedals and in the end they just didn't sound very good.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I've actually been doing is listening to those mixes and trying to figure out what needs to change and what needs to go up and down.
Take your vocals off.
Vocals need to go down a lot.
Off.
Kick drum needs to go down.
No, more of that.
No, there's too much kick drum in there.
More drums, more bass, turn everything
else
down.
I strongly believe that the two loudest things on a recording should be drums and vocals.
Yeah.
Nothing else really matters. Sorry, Joe. When it comes to an actual recording, those are the cool bits.
I mean, he doesn't even have any vocals on
his
record.
Well, I know, that's why I'm apologising.
Right.
But yeah, other than that, getting ready to move. And I'm going on holiday tomorrow, which is exciting.
Going to Valencia.
That's right, yeah.
You literally won't have time to look. I was going to say, you're going to try and find any guitar shops or like cool Spanish guitar things.
Don't know what we're going to do. We only decided to do it last week. So, going to do that. But mainly, I'm moving house and it's an utter, utter nightmare.
Yeah, not much time for guitar playing.
No. This weekend was spent on the phone trying to sort out internet being ready.
Yeah.
For the time that I move in. So not particularly exciting, I'm afraid.
Joey B, I'm sure you can make up for Jay's lack
senor.
Of guitar playing. Because you're always busy playing guitars and stuff.
Bueno.
What have you been up to? Did you record some music?
Yes, I did.
I thought so. That's why I asked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I went and did a live video at Small Pond Studios in Brighton.
Was that today?
No, that was on the weekend. That was on Sunday. Sunday? I think it was Sunday.
Yesterday.
Yeah, we did like an... Yes. Yeah, that sounds right.
Today.
Yeah, yesterday. It was good. We did like all day recording like a live video. But it was cool. We had a really good time.
What does that involve?
Well, for us... Because we were in the one room, we had
Well, I mean, is it truly live, or
yes.
Are you recording the? Are you doing like live to tape sort of thing on the music and then like miming over the top?
So there are. I see what you're saying. No, it's filmed and recorded at once.
Okay,
we had four takes and we picked the best one.
Ah, okay.
We only had three cameras on the go, so we did actually cheat a little bit afterwards. We did a couple of mime takes,
right,
just for extra camera
to fill in a couple of bits.
Yeah, that was it. But like, there's no overlays or extra stuff. The actual musicality was all done.
Yeah.
Did you do any of that stuff where you like stick a GoPro on the bay on your headstock? And
no,
boogie
we've
around.
Done that. We've done that. But no, we
people
didn't.
Passed that. That's like 2016.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we did it in like 2013.
Right,
so.
Okay. Ha ha.
It was really good. So we did. We had to booth up Tim's double amp. So his orange.
Oh, like put it in a booth.
Yeah, his orange Rocker 30 and his hovercraft. Although actually for recordings, we keep ending up using a Cornford Roadhouse 30.
Oh, yeah.
Surprisingly really good.
They are. The precursor to the Victory stuff. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah, same designer, Martin Kidd. Yeah.
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're really good and not much money either.
Where's that from then? Where are you recording all the time?
Well, this
at Brighton
was,
Electric.
Yeah, Brighton Electric, but this was actually at Small Pond, but
right.
we brought the
do
the
you
Cornford
own it?
Along. No. It's one of the recording amps at Brighton Electric.
Ah, okay.
So last time when we recorded, like a year ago or more, when we recorded at Brighton Electric, we took in, we had sort of marked off for our sessions. We brought Tim's hovercraft, Dwarvenaut 20, his orange Rocker 30. We had a high watt 50 watt combo, 212 combo, a Vox Night Train, the 50 watt version.
Yes.
And I think we bought a Marshall Jubilee in, a silver Jubilee in.
Right.
Which was pointless because it was the worst amp by a metric mile.
And was it the one that's been in Brighton Electric for like nearly 20 years?
I don't know.
Was it from Brighton Electric?
Yes, it was Brighton Electric one.
It's been there a very long time.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. And
used to be owned by the manager of GAC, that amp.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. How about that? And the Roadhouse 30, and we ended up recording like the bulk of the main guitars on the Roadhouse, which was very surprising because it was certainly like the least sort of brand associated with the sort of thing we're doing, and the least.
Oh, it's a classic math rock amp, the the Cornford.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't at all
what you expect to use, but yeah, we loved it so much. And actually, whilst Tim's orange Rocker 30 sounds great live, every time we record with it, you like listen back. We've done like a few live sessions with it. It's just like, it's so thin.
Yeah.
That it doesn't seem to matter in the room when you've got all those bass frequencies, but when they're close mic'd, they're just really, really thin. So we've started making sure we have the Cornford for recording. But yeah, that was very good.
I remember those Cornford amps being seriously affected when they were new, being seriously affected by like needing running. Like they had the most like the speakers were so held back straight out of the box. I don't know whether it's like where they were stored or like the manufacturing process on those particular speakers, but they sounded terrible when you got the amp out of the box. Like awful, almost like practice amp style.
They have a real bad rep, to be honest. I just wanted to give it a go, when we actually got it into the studio. And
when the speakers have had like a good few hours of kind of movement in them, they sound so good. But the problem was when I was selling them at the shop, people would be like, "Oh yeah, can I just get a new boxed one?" And you'd be like, "No, you want one that's no, I want the new boxed one." And then they get it home and be like, "This sounds awful." Like, yeah, we said you should have got the one that had been played for a bit. Yeah.
So what speakers were they using?
I can't remember. It's been a while since I looked at one. Joe, you probably remember.
Well, this is just the head.
Right. Okay,
so, yeah, it's just the head, so I don't know.
I wonder if it's like a particularly Presumably it's a Celestion.
It could be anything. Could be how they were stored, I guess. You know, if they were stored like in a particularly cold space, I guess.
If it was all of them that was, you know, if they were all happening and it was just, you know, maybe it was a particularly...
Possibly. I can't remember what they put in there. Matt, you're the one in front of a computer. You might be able to find out. But
with the Cornfords, I'm pretty sure they were just standard Celestions.
Right.
I'm certain they was just standard
like
G12s
or something.
Yeah. Trinity 30s, because the all the Victory stuff have their own cabs, and it's one of the few times I've gone, actually, these are the best sounding cabs because they're solid pine, which most aren't. And they use Celestion speakers in those, and the design is very similar speaker wise I think to the old Victory cabs, because those Victory cabs are great.
I
remember the old Cornford ones being really good, because I think the ultimate Cornford was the MK50, wasn't it? That was the kind the flagship one, and I'm pretty sure that was just two Vintage 30s.
It was the Hurricanes, I think, that were most affected from what I can remember, which was like
I think the Hurricanes were much later in the Cornford life, and I think those ones were PCB.
Right.
Were they the Chinese ones?
No, I'm sure that they were still a British-made thing. I just remember them suffering a lot from this problem with the speakers, that they sounded very bad out of the box, and then after about 2-3 hours they sounded absolutely incredible. But difficult to explain that to someone in the shop when they've just got one out of the box.
I've just realised.
Go on.
I did plug in a guitar.
Oh, you
this
went?
Week.
Yes, of course. Okay, went on a little shopping excursion.
I did. I went into GAC earlier in the week. The manager of the shop, Alex, who's a friend of ours, put up on his Facebook a picture of the new Hampstead amps that GAC has just taken on.
Mm. Yeah.
And I plugged in the Artist 20 RT into the 1x12 vertical cab that they had in there. And I used one of the Fender Duosonics, which I've been thinking about.
This is the Mexican one?
The Mexican Fender Duosonics that came out this year. Back end of last year. Ding.
Ding.
And it sounded absolutely unbelievable. That Hampstead. Have you had a chance to play? That Hampstead. That Hampstead sounded like utterly, utterly wonderful.
They are ridiculously brilliant.
Yeah.
They are
and
a
head
lot
is
of money.
Really good value for money.
Yeah,
I thought it was quite good value for money. $16.99 for something built in the UK.
Oh
with
no,
reverb
yeah.
and trim.
Absolutely. I'm not suggesting they're not value for money. I'm saying $16.99 is still a lot of money when you know you can buy a perfectly giggable amp head for £600. Hell, get a DV Mark, you know, one of those
multi-amp.
No, not the multi-amp, the little 50 watt back pocket jobbies that they've done, solid state things. They're less than £250. But yes, these Hampsteads obviously are a completely different beast. You're right that they are value for money, but they are brilliant.
It sounded absolutely amazing, and like the range is really simple. So they do the Artist 20 and they do the Artist 20 RT,
which is with reverb and tremolo.
The tremolo sounded good, the reverb sounded very good, and they do that in a 20 watt head or a combo. My word, absolutely incredible. Like really, really one of the best sounds I've heard in such a long time.
There's a snakeskin one in there as well.
Oh my word.
I know, that really sort of ruins it for me. They so suit the sort of creamy tweedy look. That's
you can't have a snakeskin amp, that's ridiculous.
Well, not a snakeskin Hampstead. It's like, it's such a sort of classic set, but like classic's the wrong word, kind of
understated, subtle.
You know, it's like a rich, fine, well-developed, mature sounding amplifier, and then to sort of, you know,
made something that matches Brett Michaels' boots.
Yeah, or Slash his leather hat. You know, it's
not
it's
good.
Just, yeah, it's not good. Weird. Weird combo.
I also went into GAC this week.
Yeah, we must have missed each other by like 10 minutes.
This is on both of our way to get a kebab.
Yeah, it's good.
Saturday afternoon before the football.
I'm really glad that I've started paying you guys to get
to
in
say,
this GAC
say,
promo.
Well, you know, we used to say the shop that we work in or whatever, but let's just say where it is. Mine's going to be less convincing, unfortunately. I tried those new 335
Eastman.
I was not impressed.
Really?
I'm really sorry.
That's fine.
I think for the right player, they're probably fine. Mm-hmm. I just didn't like them at all.
But the build quality, do you see?
It was pretty good.
Did you not think it was pretty good? It was phenomenal.
They're quite a lot of money.
They are. Well, they're over £1,000. But a Gibson 335 starts at £2,500.
Made in America.
Yeah, these are made in a custom shop of sorts.
Okay, good.
Why does the nation that something's made in have so much impact? I tell you what, that is my next Branton Ranton.
Branton. No, not so much that, but it had, like, from playing a lot of guitars, uh-huh. I know what American guitars feel like, I know what a Korean guitar feels like, and I know what a Chinese guitar feels like, and there are some it's a tangible thing, but right. I couldn't tell you why this is so. I know what the finish of a Chinese guitar is like, and I know what the finish of a Korean guitar is like, and it's only through the experience of playing so many of all of them, they felt very much like a Chinese guitar. They are Chinese, aren't they?
They are, but they begin with B. Where's the place in China?
Beijing.
Thank you. It's good. A Beijing custom shop. That's what they're going for. They're saying they're Beijing. It's not, because they're trying to get away from people lumping, because it is a different build quality. These aren't squires.
No, not at all.
They're very well built, and they're built by a small team of expert luthiers. They just happen to be Chinese.
Yeah, no, for sure. I also saw them, and you know, partly this is down to the choice of guitar that was put front and center, but I was immediately turned off by, and I realize this is completely down to my own personal preference, but if ever I see a guitar and it's like, oh, they've stuck a Bigsby on it because they think it makes it look classy, and it's like, you didn't have to do that.
Some people like Bigsby's, didn't have to
put a Bigsby on it, didn't have to do it.
People could have been turned into a cheaper.
But like, I one of the things that the cross Ranton
doesn't work.
The cross is cross.
Cross talk.
It's like cross words. It just
nice. I like
just
it.
Just putting a Bigsby on something doesn't immediately make it classier.
You can't say that about every guitar that has a Bigsby. I understand it when you say that about a £300 Gretsch, but when you say it about a £1,200 like custom built guitar, it's like, no, yeah, they're totally within their right to put a Bigsby.
It didn't need it on there.
Oh, just because you like hardtails, though.
Yeah.
It's something that we'll talk about in this week's Patreon, actually, because we had a really good question about the kind of crossover between Epiphone and Gibson guitars. You know, some of the Gibson stuff is, or some of the Epiphone stuff now crosses over with the price point where you could get an American-made Gibson, and we'll talk about that in the Patreon episode.
We're actually going to talk a little bit about this in the news as well, in a news article that you didn't put in, I think.
We can talk about that. But yeah, for me, they start getting up to the price point where a bit more will get you an American-made guitar.
Yeah, they are £1,000, but the guitar that they are directly competing with
for sure is
over
two and a half
price.
Times
yeah,
exactly.
Sure. Right, sure.
For what it's worth, we sold the first day that we promoted them, which was like, people seem to be sort of into them, and yeah, I completely appreciate it. That's cool that you didn't like the band. I really liked them when they brought everything into our offices and showed us sort of the selection of bits and bobs, just because it did all seem like a step up, like for anyone who wants a guitar like that. And there is a black hole. That is a great place to put.
Yeah, no,
I don't want to buy an Epiphone dot. Like, I don't want an Epiphone, but I don't want to spend £2,500. And I love big, like 335.
You love big bodies.
I love big butts, and I cannot lie.
I love big bodied sort of jazz box guitars, but there's nothing for you to get. And this Eastman has filled an excellent price point.
It really is a troublesome area insofar as, you know, people would come in and they would say, look, I really like the look of
Matt's thinking about big butts, he's gone.
I do really like 335s, but I don't want to spend
two and a half grand,
you know, what can I get that isn't, but I don't want to get an Epiphone. And In terms of the selection of stuff that we were doing at GAC, you know, being a relatively mainstream store, it's like, well, there's some Yamaha bits, and like, I don't want a Yamaha.
Yeah, okay, some there's some Ibanez bits.
I'm not buying an Ibanez.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, you could get a Gretsch. It's like, well, that's not really the same thing. Yeah. And that's kind of your options, you know.
Yeah,
so it is an area that has been somewhat ignored by the major brands, and I wonder how much of that is to do with you know, what we were talking about last week with regards to the companies like JHS getting sued.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is for the
infringement of the copyright.
They are slightly different in their body shape, and I think probably different enough that they'll be okay. I mean, the Gibson have, the more I think about that court case, like Gibson specifically went out after JHS because Vintage were not trying to bring anything new to the market. All they were trying to do is take a piece Epiphone pie.
Again, we should say that, you know, we're not lawyers and we haven't looked into this, you know, deeply enough, and we certainly don't know, because as far as I'm aware, not much of the detail actually came out. When we spoke to a listener who heard us, I think last week,
Laurie Anstis,
who we sort of asked about it.
Yeah,
he said that because it was settled, like most of the details aren't out there,
so we're going to come out.
We don't actually know. Like,
fair enough. Yeah,
I wonder if that means we can speculate. Because you literally don't know anything.
Yeah,
but maybe not.
It's probably not. But
yeah.
The difficulty is going to be, you know, what constitutes a 335? What constitutes a flying V?
Completely.
You know, can Washburn release, you know, a pointy flying V style guitar? Who knows?
So one thing about Eastman, actually, sort of on that topic, is that when we took them on at GAC, we were predominantly taking them on for their acoustics.
Right.
And their electrics were just sort of something that was... that we decided to take a few of to see how they did, but we were much more tentative about like how they were actually going to perform because of Epiphone and Gibson, and the acoustics were the one that we were like, they're a strong brand for that. But it's been kind of completely the reverse. Like,
right.
They seem to be doing really well on the electric front because they're filling that gap, but actually on acoustics, whilst they're really good, they are at a price point that competes with
entry-level Taylors.
And now entry-level Martins as well.
Completely.
So it is,
and I think also, you know, I think acoustic guitars are more similar in terms of like what someone will purchase. Acoustic guitars are far more akin to basses, in that if you're a regular bass player, you know, I'm not including you in this.
Uh-huh. Because he's definitely not a regular bass player.
Because you're, you know,
not a regular human.
You're not a regular geezer, no.
Right.
But most people, if they own a bass, they own a bass, and they own a electric guitar, and then they own 100 electric guitars. Sorry, they own one acoustic. Did I say electric?
Acoustic,
yeah, you meant acoustic.
One bass, one acoustic, and then loads of electric guitars. And if they're going to buy, if someone's going to buy a second guitar, they're more likely to buy another electric guitar. So acoustics. I don't want more than one acoustic guitar. You know,
I don't want an acoustic guitar.
I was just about to buy a second one.
Why? Because there's some sort of 8-string fretless bass version out.
Yeah, you saw.
What, are you buying a Taylor?
An 8-string fretless
acoustic
bass.
Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah.
No. I just
your summer busking
gigs.
What
a nicer one.
Yeah. Anyway, with talking about Cherry Red 335s and Gibson hollow bodies and stuff, should we dive into the
nude apocalypse?
So the first thing that we should probably address this week is
sad news.
Chuck Berry passes away, age 90. A troubling character in some respects, but we'll not focus on that. We'll talk about his musical legacy.
Course.
Just, you know,
classic liberal.
We've got to say that. Got to say, it's just, you know, some people not celebrating the death of notable pervert Chuck Berry. But
yes,
we're not going to focus on that. We'll focus on the music. I watched so much Chuck Berry stuff over the weekend. I don't know about you guys.
Chuck Berry's recordings.
I watched a lot of Chuck Berry recordings over the weekend.
Right.
Of him playing.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, of course. Unbelievable how good he was and how different his style was. You know, from anything else around at the time. There's some really good stuff on YouTube of. Clearly, he's playing with trad bands, and I think we've talked about it before on the podcast, where even on recordings like Johnny B. Goode, you can hear that he's trying to push for a straight 4/4, like what we know as the rock and roll beat, you know, like backbeat basically, like just a straight rocking 4/4, and the drummer's just swinging, and you can hear it on even tracks like Johnny B. Goode, which you think like, okay, that's like a real rocking like tune, a,
yeah,
like, but the drummer is almost like stuck playing the old style, you know, big band jazz swung, and you can hear in Chuck Berry's playing, he's trying to force him to play a style of music that hasn't been invented yet in that, on that song. And you can kind of see that when you watch the YouTube videos as well, in that he's out there doing all this like stuff, like guitar, you know, histrionics and like messing around and stuff, and he's playing with these like just, you know, four kind of like straight ahead guys, like buzz cut haircuts, like playing an upright bass and stuff like that. And yeah, he's there just showing off, basically, something that no one was doing. I remember watching the Bob Dylan documentary where he's talking about like music went from like How Much Is That Doggy in the Window being like number one for weeks and weeks and weeks, and that was like, that's music, that's what people listen to, and then suddenly like rock and roll happens. And you can kind of see it in those early Chuck Berry videos that he's kind of invented this new thing, and you can hear that on the records. Matt, any clues? Yes. As to the Chuck Berry guitar sound?
Yeah, I was kind of trying to do a bit of reading into it today, and it's really difficult because I think he's just one of those guys that kind of played a few hollow body Gibsons. I can't really find out about what amp he used. I mean, one of the famous pictures of him, he's playing an ES-350TN.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
From 1956, and that's the kind of Gretschy looking hollow body with the sort of intricate tailpiece, and then the two P90s with the custom inlay, so the dual sort of trapeze inlays.
Yeah,
and I think that and a 335, but I couldn't pin down exactly what one.
Yeah,
because what year was Johnny B. Goode?
Mid 50s, I guess.
Because I was trying to work out what model was actually available at that point.
I think
point.
It's 56 for some reason. That would make sense thinking of the Back to the Future timeline.
58.
Okay, right. Okay.
58. So he could have played a 335 at that point because that was the first year,
yeah,
I think, of the straight ahead 335. Obviously, there have been hollow bodies before that, but I think the 335 dot as we know it now was 58, I think. But yeah, it's been difficult.
Earlier than that.
No, not a 335.
Oh,
there was
okay.
Other 33 ones, but I think 335 with the dot. I think with the dot inlays was 58, because you always right. Get a 58, a 59, a 60, and a 61. But you don't get anything earlier
right.
Than that. But then I can't really find out about the amp. Someone's like. I was just looking on a few forums, and someone's like, yeah, he definitely used a 65 reissue Fender Twin. I'm like, I kind of think he probably didn't use a 65 reissue Fender Twin.
Yeah, an 1865 reissue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a classic. Steam powered.
I generally don't know, because I think it was just amp cranked. I mean, there was no guitar at that point. It was just straight ahead guitar into amplifier and away you go.
I think
it's funny to think that what spurred him on to like turn it up to the point where it really, to most people, would have sounded bad.
Yeah,
like most people would have gone, "Oh, this isn't the intended sound of this amplifier."
There was a really good obituary of him on Radio 4 at the weekend, and though I forget who it was. Oh, I think it was Eric Burden from the Animals. Was saying that basically, like, he kind of cultivated this image of like being a loner almost, because he would turn up at gigs just with himself and a guitar in a case, like wouldn't bring an amp, wouldn't bring the band. And he'd like call ahead a few hours before to the promoter, like, "Can you just get me a band? And then they'll know my songs. And if they don't know my songs, it's not worth them playing with me. Like, I don't really want them on the stage. So get me a band that knows my songs. And yeah, and just get me some equipment and stuff." Like, that was the Chuck Berry thing. He'd just kind of turn up at bars and play like that. And there's that famous quote, and I can't remember who it's from, that says, like, I think it Chuck Berry himself said, something like, "When I stamp my foot, the whole world stops," because that's his way of signaling to the band, like, okay, there's the break, you know, like a lot of his songs have got like stabs and then there's like the break and he does a little double stop and then comes back in again. And that's because he would tell the band, like, "Yeah, when I stamp my foot, the whole world stops." It's like, stop playing at that point. And that's how he would direct the band. That's why you always see him do like really over exaggerated foot stomps when he's playing. But yeah, Chuck Berry, what can you say? Go and watch the 1972 in London, because that's like him with a band who have had basically like 10 to 15 years of rock and roll
putting
music
up with him.
Well, not at all. He flew into the BBC and said, "Get me a band." And it's like another band. Yeah, even then, yeah, totally. It's another band. I can't remember what they're called, but I think they're like a early prog band or something. Or like, you know, a classic rock band. Or I say classic rock. They were like a rock band.
What, like King Crimson or something?
No, not like that. They're like a young band. I can't remember exactly who it is. But and he's just in charge of them, and he's in charge of the audience. Like, they do a version of My Ding-a-ling, which is actually later went on to become the single version because the audience reaction is so good. Like, the live version became the single version. And everyone's just eating out of the palm of his hand, like the whole band, like they're all like watching what he's doing, and then he'll be like, "Yeah, take a solo," and then the piano player like does a little solo, and then he's like back to him and stuff. It's the best command of a band or an audience that there is on film. It's absolutely awesome. Yeah, so check that out. Like, even if you're not a Chuck Berry fan, or you know, not into that style of music, like, I guess some people listen to this podcast will be, you know, more into the kind of metal side of things. If you're, you know, a big guitar fan, you like that kind of shreddy guitar. This isn't that, but if you want to learn like how to control an audience and play around with like standards and stuff like that, that's kind of the thing that always gets me. Is, you know, all his songs are basically 12-bar blues. They're all standard, but the amount of kind of leverage and the amount of kind of material you can get out of that through, firstly, good storytelling with the songwriting, and secondly, when doing it live, just like messing around with the audience and messing around with the band, it's something that you don't really have now, because that music is kind of seen as old music. Bands don't really go, "Oh, should we just do like a 12-bar blues?" You know, you go and see bands and they've got their songs, but their songs are like written songs with verse, chorus and endings and bits and pieces. People don't really play standards anymore, which means unless you know the song to play, you can't play along. Whereas, you know, with this, you just get a band and go, "Yeah, it's sort of basically a 12-bar blues, and when I stomp my foot, you stop." Yes.
Play this in A or whatever.
Yeah, and then when I watch, you know, blues riff and B, watch me for the changes, try and keep up, you know. And that's something that I think we've lost a little bit, and watching quite a lot of that over the weekend, it's kind of cool to see that. People who don't know each other, never met before, getting together and going, "Yeah, we're just going to put on one of the best gigs ever," because it's basically, you know, EAB back to E again. Yeah, awesome stuff.
That's cool.
Chuck Berry. Should we do some less sad news?
Less sad news. Can we do the bit of news? I can't remember if we mentioned this last time. Epiphones. new release. Did we talk about the new Joe Bonamassa's?
We talked about the...
I saw one at the weekend, though.
Oh,
the
my Firebirds. God.
Yeah.
Oh,
we
my
talked
God.
About them, like, yeah, they were 3 months ago.
Ages ago.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Well, oh,
you
yeah,
probably,
yeah.
You probably closed your eyes because it was Joe Bonamassa.
No, no. These are the best things
they're
that
really
ever
single
happened.
Pickup.
Single pickup Firebirds. Okay, if we talked about it ages ago, we should talk about it again because they're now sort of in the country right. at guitar shops for people to go and check out. But yeah, two colours. I don't know what happened to my voice then. two colours, Sunburst, and the other one's Polymist Gold.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw the Sunburst one.
I might buy the gold one.
The Sunburst one looked very good. I didn't see the gold one.
Both of them look great, but I might buy the gold one.
It looks amazing.
They're £600 for a single pickup Firebird. And the cool thing about the Firebird from Epiphone is you don't have to sacrifice the headstock, which is always why
completely
the Epiphone Les Pauls annoyed me.
Yeah.
You still, but you're basically getting a super cool, this is kind of where that sort of Gibson versus Epiphone thing comes in,
where it sort of crosses over.
But this
one thing I will say though, Joe, is I am almost 100% sure that when we talked about this originally, you said almost the same thing but with a slightly different inflection, in that you said, hang on, this is £600
really?
For a single pickup Epiphone.
That's the difference, seeing it in the flesh.
Completely.
These are totally cool. To have something this like unique and sort of non-standard being released under Epiphone.
Can you remember if they're bolt-on or are they through next? I couldn't get one off the wall. I just saw one from the front and it looked really, really good.
Yeah, they're through. They're proper.
Yeah, see, that's always my issue with like cheap Firebirds and Flying V's and stuff. If they're bolt-on.
It's not
like
it's not a £300 guitar. It's £600.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, I mean, you know, try what a wickedly unique and super cool guitar. Now try and get that from Gibson and think about the sort of monetary investment you'd have to make.
And
it's never going to be anyone's first guitar, like a single pickup Firebird. It's just like something that's super cool that you want. So making it affordable.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice second, third guitar to have.
Yeah.
Ironically, though, the thing about the Firebirds when Gibson did bring them back was they weren't that expensive.
No.
Compared to everything else in the range. They were like $1,699 something.
They still have a few models in the range, so you can still get one for £800 for sort of a proper Gibson.
Can you?
Yeah, which isn't that far from
it. Well, they did the Firebird Zero, didn't they? Firebird...
Yeah, Zero.
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah,
I mean, that is a bad looking guitar.
I think it looks great. I think it looks great.
Look at some proper pictures of like the neck, the back of the neck, and the headstock in particular.
See, I just think that was a shame because that ended up being Amazon exclusive, didn't it?
Yeah.
And that's like, that's such a drag.
Well, I mean,
I've seen some pictures of the finish and stuff up close, and it is not good.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not good.
But yeah, they do quite a few Firebirds at the moment.
Oh,
there's
wow.
like a sort of, there's a 12-ish hundred. Pound one.
Isn't that like a studio, like
yes,
a warm,
that's right,
finish.
Black scratch?
Yeah.
Warm, but still totally cool. But anyway, why get any of those right
just
now?
Just get the Bonamassa.
But why wouldn't you? What an absolutely super cool guitar! This is the coolest thing Epiphone have done in a long time.
Yeah,
and actually, for what it's worth, Bonamassa's guitars are pretty consistently good when they come out. Do you remember the green Les Paul?
Yeah.
Was it? Was it Inverness green?
What about the signature rug?
I don't remember that.
Not quite as cool.
No, but the green Les Paul was cool. The blue Les Paul with the Firebird headstock.
That was cool. That was nice.
I didn't care so much about those tomato soup burst Les Pauls, but then they were $4,000.
He's had a lot of signature
models.
Well,
they did an American standard, and no, I didn't think they did a custom shop one, but they only did an American, and there were 2,899 and 4.
Oh, hello. Four.
Sure. Yeah, I'll take Matt's word for it.
Yeah.
You broke up a bit there, Matty. I'll take your word for it.
Oh, okay.
Good. Shall we move on to some proper news that's actually
more
written down
news.
On the list?
Oh, yeah. Can we do the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Joe, you were looking at this earlier.
No. I mean, you know, we can all talk about this. You don't have to keep it on me. But this is totally cool.
Yes, so Sur have announced the Select series. Matt, you're a Sur fan. Do you want to just give us a quick rundown?
Yeah, so basically these are a continually limited run of individual guitars that are designed by John Sur based on guitars that he would build for himself if he was going to sit in the factory and build a guitar that he would like.
What a great concept.
Yeah, I think brilliant. So the two, the production manager and the master builder, at the factory pick all the woods, and then they help realize basically his kind of design ideas. But the main one that they put on the press release is a guitar after my own heart in purple, pink, and light pink burst.
Yes, nice. I knew that you would bring this one up. The one with the Floyd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd play it even with the Floyd. That guitar is amazing.
Yeah. We're just having a quick look on the website. There is a sort of Jazzmaster 2 humbucker pink. That's so unsure.
There's a new Sur model, which we haven't actually talked about, called the JM Pro.
Right.
Which is their new body shape, which is basically a offset with 2 humbuckers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And a normal kind of 2-point trem.
A Jazzmaster. They do a through strung model
That through strung looks. This is the select range that we're looking at.
Yeah, this is the select range.
That was a question out of the thousands of people that listen to this podcast. That was actually Joe I was talking to. Sorry,
yeah,
Matt.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
The reason that I asked that is that what's quite interesting here is on the website, it actually tells you specifically where each of these guitars have gone.
Yeah, they say go and view them at.
If you want to buy that guitar, you've got to go to Peach.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I think that's really nice. And also, presumably, apart from anything, this is a bit of a cool thing for the shops that have supported Sur.
Yeah, yeah.
Get like these super limited models, you know?
For a long time, you've been able to do custom order Sur, but I don't think many people have necessarily taken up the kind of option. So they've actually had like a fully running job since pretty much day one. But I think now they're kind of doing more individual pieces and then going, yeah, this one's going to this particular dealer, that one's going to that particular dealer, or doing like making a small run of them and then basically just saying who wants to get there first. But it's on a much more limited scale than, say, Fender.
Yeah,
for example.
It's quite funny because they've got the shop reference. You can really see the difference in taste between like guitar and Peach, for example. Like Peach have gone for a couple of the new Jazzmaster shape and kind of the more traddy options, whereas guitar have got like a load of the sort of bold or...
Yeah, that's really funny.
Bling. Yeah, like really super bling, modern, like that sort of... Because guitar are all bought into like Mayonnaise and all those sort of super blingy modern bling. Brands. Yeah, you can really see sort of the difference in their purchases.
Whereas Peach is quite...
quite trad.
Trad.
Yeah, John's always been into like very weird Fender and Gibson type stuff, isn't
he? Yeah. And he goes for the pink Jazzmaster.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Perfect. Cool.
Talking about custom shop stuff and weird Fenders, Fender have just announced for the 30th anniversary of the custom shop the Founders Design guitars. Matt, have you got any details on these?
Yes, I actually saw these at NAMM, and they were sort of released then, but I don't think we really said much about it. They are seven guitars that are basically designed by the original master builders. Eight guitars designed by the eight original master builders of the Fender Custom Shop. So the first eight people that were there when they decided to found it in 1993.
Yeah.
And then each one has kind of come back to Fender to design a guitar that they're then only building 30 of each model. They're going out. So a couple of highlights.
That's not 30 years then. That's not a 30th anniversary.
Yeah, not
24 years.
No, yeah, it's 80s. It's definitely 80s. Yes, 87.
Was it 80s?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Just because a couple of the builders started
well
in 93, but they're saying...
Well spotted.
That's that economics degree.
Yeah.
I haven't actually watched... There's a mini documentary they made that's actually made up of archive footage from the day they actually started the custom shop or the day they announced it. So I don't know whether there was a couple of guys that started earlier and then some people that joined later. Because I think the one that stood out for me, the reason I said 93, was the Alan Hamill Sparkle Telecaster.
How have you not said the John Page Double F Hole Esquire?
Well, let's talk about them one at a time. So, Matt, the Sparkle, what's it called? The Sparkle Telecaster.
Sparkle Telly. Well, I mean, yeah, so these are all designed similar to the Sur range. They're designed by master builders in terms of like the perfect guitar, I suppose, they would build for themselves if they could sort of build anything.
Yeah.
And this guy also designed the Twisted Telly neck pickup. So Alan Hamill designed that pickup, and he also worked on the Western Boots Telecasters, which were the tellies that were wrapped in the leather. They were leather wrapped and came with a pair of matching boots. So
well,
yeah,
that would explain why this one is so absolutely horrendous.
No, it looks good.
The sparkle. Yeah. It's difficult because the other one, I mean, there's obviously some, I mean, when these people let their minds go a bit crazy, there's the... Well, Gene Baker did the... What do they call this one? They call it the Steelcaster, which is some weird hybrid between a Strat and a Tele. So it's got a Tele control plate on the top half, or almost all of a Strat, apart from the bottom part, which is a Tele with a Tele bridge pickup.
Yeah,
so
I've seen
you
those...
You kind of have to look a you have to look at a picture of it, because the bottom half... Or I suppose if you're looking at it head on, the bottom right hand corner is like the rounded bit from a Tele, but the rest is like, well, no, actually, the whole one half of it's a Tele, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
it's
like
a Tele, half
it's like
a
Jagstang.
That's really weird.
Yeah, it's totally
we clicked
bizarre.
On another one initially and thought that was weird, and then
no, but that one's like a Jaguar.
That's like a Jaguar
Strat.
So the Mark Kendrick Founder Strat. I think that was one of the original designs for the Strat, is to have that big metal control plate on it. But yeah,
really?
I mean, the one that stands out to me is the John Page?
Yes.
John Page double F hole Telecast Esquire, which is single pickup Tele with a what looks like Koa top and headstock and maybe ebony board.
I mean, that looks like a Sur. You know, talking about
It does. Doesn't
talking
it,
about like
fancy Fender.
I'm really
styles.
Into that. That's,
yeah,
that's
I like that
cool.
a lot. Hollow body tellies and the double F hole. You never see the double F hole telly. I'm really into that in a big way.
It's so good.
These
are
great. There's no volume.
Yeah, they're just volume and tone.
Oh, sorry, I thought they were
just well hidden. Talking about crazy exotic tops, Joe Branton, do you want to talk about the last bit of news this week? This is the thing almost gave away.
Oh my God, it was embargoed.
I know it was.
It was actually, so last week I nearly said about a second range of PRSs, and it wasn't until the next day when our PRS purchaser like forwarded some email.
The podcast saying, what are you thinking?
No. He like forwarded me an email with all the assets for the new range, and the email from PRS at the top said like embargoed until this date, which was in the future, and I was like, oh, that was very close.
Yes,
that was good. Mentioned to me.
I'm still running the podcast, and you
he never
are not.
Mentioned to me when he told me about the range that it was embargoed. I've been talking about it all week.
Yeah, but internally, you can't talk about it into a podcast that goes out to thousands of people.
He should know. Anyway, so this is really exciting. This is one of the coolest things to come out this year, and I think this range of guitars will be in our gear of the year and could well win something. The PRS SE Exotic series. So these are SEs with like weird tops, like sported maple, ebony tops, zebra wood, swamp ash. They are absolutely brilliant. They're doing them in sort of a range of guitars, so you can get them in like the custom 22s, you can get like semi hollows with P90s. They do like the 245, which is the single cut version. There's
they doing any of the interesting ones, the Myras or the Velas or the Star?
No, because they don't make those in SE.
They don't do those in SE, but of course you get a single cut though, which is pretty cool. Like
the 245,
the ebony cut 245s look absolutely brilliant. Including
the 245 is a cool guitar. Is a very cool guitar.
Yeah. There are also a couple of Tremonti signatures as well.
The Tremonti with the ebony top looks absolutely incredible, and I'm not a huge fan of him, and I'm not a huge fan of that guitar generally, but
I think the important...
I just think it needs covered pickups.
Well, fine, but I think this is the important thing to note. These guitars have exotic wood tops. They look like the sort of things that me and Mark were walking around the London Bass Show, and to be honest, all of us were walking around
the guitar show,
and we were looking at guitars that were like 2-3 grand, and we were like, yeah, that's what these exotic wood tops are and cost. But PRS have managed to do this with these, like, every guitar's unique. Exotic wood tops, 799. Every guitar is 799.
Yeah, I would say I mean, I don't know, because I would have to, I'd have to ask the question and someone at PRS would have to answer. Are they actual tops? Or, are they veneers or are they laminates?
Yeah.
Because that will massively affect the price.
At 799, they've got to be laminates.
I would have thought they'd be veneer, because veneer...
It's veneer.
I can't remember which one's thicker. Is veneer thicker?
Veneer's thicker, yeah. Veneer's thicker than laminate, yes.
Because there's no way they could be, obviously, like a solid top for that for that price.
But I think the thing is, at 799... At 799, it kind of doesn't matter that they're not.
No, not at all.
Because it's like, the only difference really between an 800 quid guitar and a 500 quid guitar is the aesthetics a lot of the time. You know, so it doesn't matter too much. And if you're getting something that looks like a 5 grand custom model, whatever.
Some of these are actually 729 as well. I really think this is a lot of value for money.
I'm into the 277s, the baritones. There's a picture of one, I think, in the zebra wood.
Right.
That's almost like cherry burst. It looks awesome.
Yeah, yeah. All very, very nice indeed. Do you know what, chaps? We got through a whole round of news without mentioning a guitar pedal. That was all guitar-related this week, which is good. Very, very impressive.
And all the news was cool and exciting. That was a lot of guitar.
That was cool.
The Fender stuff, the Epiphone stuff, I know that was a repeat, the Sur stuff, and the PRS stuff.
Yeah.
The gear of the year at the end of this year is
going to be guitar-heavy.
Do we do a half-year one?
What? No?
We did a
Patreon, I think, last year.
Not until June or July, though. Right. Not yet.
We're only a quarter of the way through the year.
Yeah.
There's going to be so much stuff. It's all so good as well. This is a good year.
Talking about this year, our New Year's resolution was to answer more questions. We've got a few minutes left of the podcast. We should probably squeeze a question in. Matt, does that sound good to you? You sound like you're about to say something.
I was going to give one last piece of sad news.
Oh, go on.
My Friedman guitar is stuck in Cites hell.
I think we spoke about the Shergolds.
Yeah, yeah. Shergolds are gone.
What?
Are they gone or are they back?
No. They're also stuck in Cites hell.
Yeah.
They're all held at
It's going to be.
Docks.
It could be another. Well, they're estimating at least another 3 months.
Really? Where is it then?
It's still in America. They can't get the... I heard that they couldn't get the certificates. They're having a real problem.
Wow.
Because they're not bulk guitars like a Squire, where they can have one Cites for a whole thing. I think each guitar's got to have its own Cites package. And I think it's proving difficult because the selection process on the Friedman guitars is really tight.
Yeah.
I think it's proving difficult with Cites. So, yeah, at the moment, no clear date in sight, which is a shame. So there must be a lot of other people in a similar terrible situation.
You know what's not affected? Alder and maple. You know what guitar's made of alder and maple? Telecasters. So what that means is buy a Telecaster.
Yeah. That's what
it
Matt
is
did.
A telly. That's what I did.
It hasn't got
it's
like,
just got a rosewood board on it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, let's do a... I was going to say a...
Question!
Good. That's all we've got time for. Which one should we do? Charlie says, I've played Fender style amps for years, but recently bought a Vox style amp. Any recommendations for a medium gain bluesy sounding overdrive pedal to use with it? Matt Knight.
Do you know what pedal I've revisited recently, which is great and works in all situations?
Hotcake. Yes. Yes. Crowther Audio.
You need something not too bass heavy, I guess, to go with a Vox.
For people who've not kind of heard about the Hotcake before, Matt, what's the deal with it?
So there's I think as far as I remember, it's one guy in New Zealand makes this one pedal, and he's done that for about 20 years.
Not true, mate. Prunes and custard,
and also
he also does the double hotcake. I don't know if that's still available.
No, I think that's gone. Prunes and custard still available.
I don't actually know whether that's still available.
Oh really?
I think you can only buy it secondhand.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
But the hotcake Yeah, basically a really good all-in-one overdrive. It covers boost, it covers light drive, it covers sort of more of the marshally sort of gain, almost like the vintage Bluesbreaker territory.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the some of them have the Bluesberry mod, which I think was based on that old Bluesbreaker pedal.
I think they all
just
do.
Just a great sort of chunky rhythm overdrive.
I think that's one of the things that is a little bit unknown about the Hotcake is that they, at least all of the modern ones, have got that Bluesberry mod on a little dip switch inside the pedal. So if you've got a Hotcake and you've never opened it up, it's well worth having a little look inside it just to see what's going on.
That's there was a point where they just added that down the line. Yeah. Jay Cross, have you got a recommendation? You play like Voxy stuff a lot of the time, or you used to have some Vox stuff.
I did.
What did you use
to
drive?
I used the Fender amp that I also had.
Sounds good.
It's it is a problem, I think. If you want, because those, like, don't get me wrong, I love AC30s. I think they sound absolutely great, but they're not overly versatile, let's put it that way. You wouldn't take one to a session gig. You know, they sound amazing if what you want is like a mid-heavy Vox sound.
Yeah.
Well, mid-heavy, you know, sort of 60s rock sound. So it is difficult. So, I mean, personally, if you want something that's going to, you know, really boost it up, I'd go for something that maybe will, you know, I wouldn't say alter the character per se, but like, look for something like a Tube Screamer, something that you can really, you know, a bit more shape to it.
The Green Child G77.
Matt Knight, I was thinking exactly the same thing. It's actually sat behind us here. Yeah, Green Child G777, which is a two-channel boost and drive that doesn't really sound like anything else, but it is quite bright sounding, and you could get more sort of chimey, Fendery tones putting in the front end of a Vox, I reckon.
Yeah.
That is a very good pedal. Very unknown at the moment. I think we're one of the only people to do a video on it and one of the only people to talk about it, because it's quite a new company. He's only got that pedal and one other one, I think.
He does an amp.
It's probably one of the better built pedals we've got.
Really well built. Yeah, it's in a really like unique housing. Like, it's not just a... You know, they've bought housing from a company and put it in that. I think it's actually machined for that pedal. Yeah, awesome. Three controls, so you've got, gain, focus, and boost on one channel, and then tilt, mid, and
drive
on the other channel. So, yeah, one of them's a cleaner boost, and one of them is more drive, and you can run them together as well. So,
yeah,
awesome pedal.
That sounded amazing when we did that.
Yeah.
When we did that, you should... If you're listening, Charlie, check out the Pedal of the Week demo that Matt did on that. It's because it does sound really, really good. That's the Green Child GT77.
Joe Brandon, do you want to take us out with your recommendation for a nice, clean, sort of Fendery style drive to complement a sort of not, you know, kind of bass heavy Vox?
Well, I kind of agree that you have to have something that's got a ton of tone shaping,
quite a lot of sort of sparkle to it, nice and
well. Actually, do you know what? I know that you're saying this because I've got down from the shelf the Frederick Effects Utility Percolator,
yes,
which is the drive version of a harmonic percolator, which gives you a very simple harmonic and balance control. So not really the sort of tone shaping that we've been talking about that you require, but these are super cool drive pedals.
They are. They're not
with tons of presence.
They're not bluesy though, are they? They're noisemakers.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I just like this one. I think it works well with Voxes. I would maybe a full tone OCD, I would have said, is probably one of the better things. I kind of think of them as being quite similar to Crowther Hotcakes and maybe just have the edge for me. But
great guitarist.
The edge. Yeah, great pizza. Wonderful. With that, we should call it an evening. I've forgotten what I was going to say. We are about to go and record another
Patreon.
Half an hour of Patreon content. Now, what we've been doing with the Patreon recently is we've been putting up a poll on Facebook that allows you to choose the topic. But we had a question in this week that was so good that I wanted to cover it in a whole Patreon episode.
That's well... well glossed over.
Indeed. Not that I forgot to put up the poll or anything, but this question is very good. And it actually deals with some of the stuff that we've already talked about this episode in the kind of blurred lines between the high-end Epiphone and the low-end Gibson stuff. It's a question from William on the Facebook group. So we're going to be covering that, talking about kind of what the options are at both those price points and what you should go for if you've got that kind of money to spend. So yeah, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support us. $1 a month gets you this podcast ad free and early.
Does that mean that people don't have to listen to me talking?
That's right, indeed. I mean, it doesn't cut you out entirely for podcasts.
That's a shame.
At $5 a month, you get the extra half an hour of podcast content every week. You also get Branton's Rant On, the little mini-series. And worth mentioning, if you sign up now, you can go back and listen to all the previous Patreon episodes. So there's like 60 or 70 hours worth of content on there that you can listen to for $5 a month. It's like the Netflix of guitar nerds, basically. And for $10 a month, you become our executive Patreon backer, like these lovely people have. I'm trying to think of a little...
I'm going to start.
I'm trying to think of a song.
Hurry.
Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andrew Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Thomas, Carlos Mantra, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, J.D. Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Guardian, Jack Goffer, Will Clare, Scott, Brian McCoy, Phil Thompson, Roy Gunther, Will Clare, Colin,
There we go, very good. Little Chuck Berry tribute. I'm sure he would have been proud of our little thing. Very good.
As an aside, and I'll say this to you three as well as the three people who are still listening.
Yes.
I haven't forgotten that we promised that we were going to do a live podcast. Originally, the plan was to do it for the 100th episode, and that didn't happen. And then we were going to do it for the 2-year anniversary. And that isn't going to happen either.
Because we're all moving and stuff.
Because we're all
When's
moving.
When's the 2-year anniversary?
May. First week of May, which is when I am getting kicked out of my house.
Living on the streets.
Yes, indeed.
But the place that we want to do it, I emailed them today to say, what have you got available on a Friday or a Saturday night at some point in May or June? And the guy who's a friend of mine emailed me back basically saying LOL.
Right.
So it's probably more likely to be in the summer.
Okay.
We will definitely do a live podcast.
You're moving to a bigger place, why don't we do it there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone just come around.
I've got a nice little patio.
Yeah, nice.
We'll have a little barbecue.
Just wait till I build my blues shed.
Can't wait. Blues bunker.
The blues bunker, that's where it's going to be. Anyway, so thanks for listening if you still are. You can follow us, as always, on Twitter, @GuitarNerds, Instagram, @GuitarNerds. Go to YouTube, youtube.com/GuitarNerds videos. I'm working on an excellent video about the weirdest Ibanez guitars ever produced, which will be going up at some point this week. And you can follow us individually, @Mark_Random, @Matt_Knightsey, @JAYBN1, and @Joseph_900.
Do you always do that? You don't normally
do that. I've stopped doing it, and
I've stopped using Twitter.
Yeah, I've sort of fallen out of love with Twitter, but if people want to see what we're up to, I guess it's on there.
Yeah. So. I still use Twitter a lot. I talk a lot about the fact that I really like coffee.
Lefty liberal, innit?
No.
Mainstream media, liberal elite, J Cross.
I talk at JAYBN1. I talk a lot about coffee.
Good. And with that, we will call it an evening. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.